Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel as we kick off this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Tuesday, the 10th of February, much nicer weather than yesterday. Wouldn't anything be an improvement, but we are even, Mike and I were talking about this earlier, there's even a chance we may see the sun.
The what?
The sun. I know. Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, let's start off and introduce the panel, and then we'll introduce the web address so that you can be a part of our conversation as well. WAMC's Alan Chartek is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, group. I'm okay. I hear there's another storm coming, maybe Thursday.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
It's unbelievable.
So.
We had a lot of snow in Great Barrington.
Oh, my God, we did. It's at that point where you look out your front door and about halfway up.
Yeah.
You know, you... And you think,
Love the parking lot right here at WAMC. You've lost about four spots because it's just filled with snow.
Well, now it's much better. It seems to me it's much better.
Well, that is the problem, though. Where to put it all?
Yeah, where to put it all. That seems to be the big issue that is facing municipalities around the Northeast.
Costs a lot.
Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Great. Good morning.
And Albany Journalism Professor, SUNY Albany. Journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us as well. Good morning, Rosemary.
Happy to be here.
Very nice to have you here. So a lot of places that we can begin, but let me remind you, by the way, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to WAMC.org/roundtable, and you'll see a post that says 2/10/15, which is today's date, 2/10/15, and you can click on that and comment there, and we would love to see what you have to say and hear what you have to say. Let's go with the Alabama gay marriage. And this is interesting on, I think, several fronts. First of all, of course, that when you think, I know that this is a very Northeast perspective that I have, but like, if you have Alabama, right? Seriously, like Alabama? Great.
They're living up to Selma.
Okay. So Alabama, so then they pass, they say, okay, same-sex marriage is legal in Alabama, and then gay couples went to their town justices to have their marriage licenses issued, and they were told, in some cases, no.
Well, in most counties, they were told no.
No.
50 of the 67 counties, they were denied licenses to have marriages, and that's because of their chief judge, who disagrees with the federal appeals court ruling that cleared the way for gay marriage.
But the larger issue here, of course, is the fact of the Supreme Court, and we have talked about this, and I'm interested in getting your perspective, because by not going further with the case, is the Supreme Court saying, okay, we've pretty much made our minds on this issue, and that's exactly what Justice Clarence Thomas says. He says that this acquiescence may well be seen as a signal of the court's intended resolution of that question. He wrote in a dissent from the court's order refusing to stay the weddings, "This is not the proper way to discharge our responsibilities." I find this fascinating.
I was up all night last night watching it. I'm about to say something I have never said before.
Really?
Thought I would never say.
Ooh.
But I think Clarence Thomas is right.
Yeah.
I think the court will decide in favor of gay marriage for everyone, and it's going to do it soon. And Alabama went and asked for a stay until that final decision, which is just months away. And why not, for the matter of states' rights, say, yeah, leave things the way they are until we decide once and for all. That is not a big deal. It does not impinge on anyone's rights. And by doing it the way they have, Thomas is right. The Supreme Court has said, we don't care about the state's feelings.
And he'll be a dissent in that vote that comes in June or
whatever. He will.
Along with Justice
Scalia.
But he
sort of recognizes that's going to be futile.
Well, so let me just get this straight, Rosemary, to make sure that I got your words correct. You think he's right. But
he's
you
correct
don't think,
in his assessment.
Yeah, but you don't think he's good, do you?
No, absolutely not.
He's wrong in his vote on the issue, but he is right on the fact that the court should decide as a whole on this matter, and it did not have to be decided through
the stay
in Alabama.
It is usual in court proceedings that when a big issue is about to be decided, you hold everything as it is right now. And right now in Alabama, that is no gay marriage. The federal judge in Alabama said, okay, we can now have gay marriage. And that's what Alabama wants to just hold off. And they can't hold it off past, say, June, when the Supreme Court is going to decide once and for all on a national right to marriage.
I think it's important to clarify that the federal judge just didn't say it's okay to have gay marriage. Basically, the federal district court that includes Alabama found that their same-sex ban in their constitutional amendment in Alabama was unconstitutional. In fact,
that's
it does not jive with the U.S. Constitution, and therefore, you can have gay marriage.
that's all actually true, but the point is still the same. The procedural point is the same. You leave things as it has been while you make a big, momentous decision. And it has been only recently that our Supreme Court has ruled that the Constitution does allow gay marriage.
So let me ask this question to Alan, which is, why do you think the court would play their hand like this?
Well, I don't think any of them are real happy about the whole deal, as Rosemary may indicate on Clarence Thomas. So you get the five votes that are always there. I can't imagine that these characters are interested in preserving gay marriage because it's the right thing to do. I don't think they like it. So therefore, you know, they're dragging their heels, they're oomphing and offing and doing that kind of thing. But I think they know, as John Roberts did with Obamacare, that there are times you just would get your own court into too much trouble by going the other way.
But good comparison, Alan. That's true.
But do you wait? But to Rosemary's point, do you wait until the decision? What do you gain by sort of not exercising that power in the stay at this point?
I don't know.
it demonstrates.
And I guess that's a big question, isn't it? And it's certainly the question that Clarence Thomas has that you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's 4 months away. It's 4 months. It's not like saying to people, you can't get married. Hold on indefinitely. It's 4 months. Plan a big wedding. You got lots of time now.
Plan a big wedding in 4 months.
Well, yeah, if you've been waiting, you know, all these years to have the right to marry.
Well, so many of these people have been married in another state and just want to get married in their own state.
Exactly.
Or register their marriage.
Right, register their marriage in their
state. So I don't see, even though I'm totally in support of marriage for anyone who wants to get married, although, and for those who don't get married. But despite that, this is not a hardship for anybody. And the Supreme Court truly has trampled on states' rights, I think, in this ruling, the way Clarence Thomas said. I also, in the same way, would compare it to the vote on the 2000 election. Elections are run by the states. What was the Supreme Court involved with that for? Why? Just stay out of it. Same thing.
Alabama's request was somewhat different from others. The court has denied. No appeals court has reviewed U.S. District Judge Callie Grande's decision that Alabama's ban was unconstitutional, and it was the first request the court has received since it announced last month that it would review an appeals court decision that upheld restrictions on same-sex marriage in Michigan, Ohio, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this and other issues. We welcome your letters. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.
Support comes from KW Home, East Hampton, Massachusetts, offering home furnishings and interior design services featuring furniture, rugs, lighting, and window treatments. KWHome.net. And the Opalka Gallery at Sage College of Albany, featuring art exhibits and other cultural events. Coming soon, the 37th Annual Photography Regional, opening March 3rd, sage.edu/opalka.
Thank you.
Good morning, and welcome back to our roundtable discussion, our panel this morning. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and we have letters.
We do.
I just love the subject headings of some of them. Just one, this is wrong again. I was like, oh, goody, let's go.
So Jay says, to Rosemary's comments, this is not theoretical for some families. It's not about planning a big wedding. If only one, possibly older couple, is able to resolve legal issues through a recognized marriage, it's a good thing to proceed quickly. Since it's about you, did you wish to say
no,
any more? You've said enough.
Fair comment.
Okay. Kenner says, dear Joe, rather than your Northeast perspective, could you try on the Malcolm X perspective? In other words, if you are south of the Canadian border, you are in the South. And I have to agree that Clarence Thomas has a point. And that's from Kenner.
Does anybody know what that means?
No.
Okay.
And I certainly don't. And Michael.
Do you?
Yeah. You were saying that you're not of the South and you were disparaging Montgomery. And Malcolm X is saying if you're anywhere in the United States,
gotcha.
You're part of it.
Because I was saying about Alabama.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
Point taken. Thank you.
Michael. I see Clarence Thomas's dissent not as a deference to states' rights until the court can decide, but rather as a continuance of the ban until he can vote against it, as he surely will. Yes, but he'll lose, and that's why he's so angry about this, I suspect. Okay. Okay, dear panel, this is on Citizens United. I've been wondering about this for a while. Is there a simple yes-no answer to this question? If Citizens United prevents us from knowing who is putting money into elections, is there anything to prevent Saudi or Chinese billionaires from buying American elections? Thank you, and that's from Paul.
I can answer part of that. Maybe readers or listeners will know more. The law actually calls for transparencies. There is an ability to go into a PAC, and then you can do that anonymously. So, yes, Chinese or Afghani or any kind of billionaires can put money into a PAC.
But isn't it illegal for a foreign government to fund
contribute
a U.S. election?
Are you funding a U.S. election
or
if you contribute to a
political position?
Yeah.
Are you lobbying?
Yeah, exactly.
So Neil says, I disagree that waiting wouldn't be a hardship. If that were the case, then why not make everyone wait, straight or gay, for 4 months until the Supreme Court
decides? Some of the probate judges in Alabama are doing that. They don't want to have any marriage license giving out because they're afraid that they will be sued by gay couples who are coming in and saying, you know, you denied me the right to marriage under the U.S. Constitution. I'm allowed. So they're not going to let anybody get married.
Bob says, wrong again. Rosemary doesn't seem to have a clue about how important immediate marriage rights are for the people involved. Without legal marriage, there are lost rights to participate in partners' critical medical decisions, adoptions, inheritance, and so on and on. How can Rosemary fail to recognize the damage waiting causes?
That's not what you said.
No.
Well, they are, because I'm saying I think you should wait 4 months and have it all
and
resolved.
It all
one
time,
well, right, but
is
it isn't about the issue. But
yeah.
but again, they didn't have marriage before in Alabama.
Right, right. The point is a good one, though. You know, if you can get married right now and deal with a medical issue or a decision about your partner, I can understand that. But we don't make laws for every little emergency. We make it for the overall good. And Clarence Thomas just has a point that recognizing the rights of states to take care of their own affairs before we have a major turn like we have on this one is important.
Well, if there's Alabamans that want to get married, people of the same sex, and they need to because of life decisions.
Go to Birmingham where you can do it.
Go somewhere. Within the state.
Within their own state.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of them are doing.
Well, yes, yeah. But don't forget that that's what they say about abortion also. We're in, you know, the legislature, Texas or something, passes a law and says you can't have an abortion unless you have this kind of a hospital, and then, you know, somebody's got
to have
to
go 200 miles.
This is a real temporary situation, and that was a temporary remedy.
Somebody's
that's all I'm
have
saying.
The cash,
yeah.
And that kind of thing.
The temporariness of the situation is what sways me, whereas abortion, that in Texas, for example, that's shut down forever.
Right.
Okay, and Billy, our friend Billy Easton, actually, the court can avoid making a decision that is against gay marriage by not taking up the stay. Thus, they avoid a lot of the blowback that they don't want. Gay marriage goes forward, and they neither have to say it should or should not be at this time. That's from Billy. Okay.
Hard story to follow because it's can you do it, can you not? Hold up a stay. What does that mean? I get a headache reading this story.
Okay. And then there was somebody, I wish I could find that Now, oh, here it is, from North Canaan. I was taken aback by the deliberate discontinuation by your station in the middle of Chancellor Merkel's answer to the first question asked by reporters yesterday. Midday not only didn't have a simultaneous interpretation for the Chancellor's comments, but they interrupted their scheduled program to broadcast this newscast. Yet without so much as a reason or excuse, they cut it off while Merkel was speaking. You've been talking about a lot of negative aspects in people in journalism on various shows for a while now, and yet here you are deciding to stop broadcasting, depriving the listeners of the nuances of the speakers and the questions being asked. Furthermore, this is a slight on our president and a blemish on our country and further questionable practices by the Fourth Estate, and that's from Ole.
Bullocks.
Whoa.
Well, you were depriving the listeners who can speak German or...
Well, yeah. as one of the people in the room who was sort of working
there.
On when we were trying to figure this out, just for the story yesterday, the president and Angela Merkel were speaking, and it was supposed to begin at 11:40. It began shortly after Midday Magazine began, and we took it with NPR said was unanchored coverage. And we have covered these in the past. We felt it was important, so we decided to cover it. In the past, there has been a translation that has been offered. NPR has taken the same translation that is heard in the president's ear. It's the same translation that is heard by the other reporters that do not speak the language within the press room. And it is also the translation that is heard throughout every other network that was airing it, either taped or live. For some reason, unbeknownst to us, NPR did not provide that translation. We felt after the initial comments, some of her comments in English, by the way, that after her initial comments and also after the president had made his remarks, and not after one question but after two questions, that we did not know how it was going to go. We felt that we felt we were doing a disservice, actually, to Angela Merkel and to the president by not being able to provide a translation, and that is why we bailed out. And I would also note that we gave full coverage on the remarks throughout the rest of the day once we translated and realized what she said.
Now, that's the serious answer, and I respect it.
But in 30 seconds, give me the non-serious answer.
But I have to say, of all the times I've been around WAMC, this is one of the funniest yet.
It was hilarious.
That here is this lady talking in German to our listeners.
For a really long time.
And nobody knows what she is saying. I get a
well,
note.
You got the best note, right?
I got a lot of notes, but I got one from our news director, Ian Pickus, who says, "Oy vey."
Yeah. And there was one who said, "How do we know she's not swearing?"
Yeah.
We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain making up the panel. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, do you have letters for us?
Well, we have something. I don't know how much. Well,
okay.
Our usual wag.
I'll take something.
Our usual wag, Don Steiner, who is very funny, he says, "Who woke up Clarence Thomas to comment on gay marriage? He was allowed to sleep through the Voter Rights Act debate." He doesn't say much, usually.
That's pretty funny.
Maybe he's got a good law clerk this time. I don't see anything else. Do you?
I guess I don't.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to other issues, and we'll talk about the Rosemary brought this up to me, and it was absolutely true because we had the fund drive last week, and we didn't get to this issue, and it is something we wanted to talk about, and that is the National Prayer Breakfast last week that was held, and the president came under some fire for his comments about at the prayer breakfast, and it's interesting because even all of these days later, I think the prayer breakfast was on Thursday, and here we are on Tuesday, that it is still making a kerfuffle.
It is all over social media today and last night, and the president's offense is that he doesn't mean enough to Islamic extremists.
So what exactly did he say? Do you remember that?
Maybe Joe can read the exact comments.
Well, my screen just went down, but go ahead.
Well, he invoked, the Crusades. He talked about, in general terms, that there's fanatics and extremists in every faith experience. And he mentioned the Spanish Inquisition. He mentioned the Ku Klux Klan in the early part of the 20th century, where some say one out of four men in certain parts of the country were members of the Ku Klux Klan. And these were examples of sound religions that had gone off the deep end and
he said people have done terrible things in the name of Jesus, and that just sent people crazy.
Well, there was an immediate reaction by sort of the conservative media industry saying that he was insulting Christians, and by bringing these up, it was inappropriate. He should be really coming out and criticizing radical Islamics who resort to violence and terrorism, and that's really the problem. And why are you bringing up these old, he was trying to put it in context, and to some that was offensive.
Now that you mentioned social media, Rosemary, we have one in our town in Great Barren. It is so bad, I don't want to give them any notice, but I look at it every once in a while, and they repeat over and over and over and over again, Obama the Muslim, Obama the Muslim, right. Obama right. the Muslim, Obama the Muslim. They say it and they say it just like they did with Obamacare and everything else. They think if they say it enough, somebody will believe it. And this, of course, fits right into that.
Oh, it does. And he's a Muslim, and so therefore he will not say the words Islamics, extremists. And he doesn't. He normally does refer to just terrorist or extremist. The message of this speech was that there are extremists everywhere. They are the bad guys. And he's being hounded for that. I'm surprised, though, even Bill Maher, I commented on that, who is a big Obama supporter, said this is wrong. Crusades were bad, but that was hundreds of years ago. Address the issue right now, which is ISIS, Islamist extremists. Mm, right. They want him to say that.
David Brooks on PBS NewsHour on Friday said, I think if the president came as an atheist to attack religion and to attack Christianity, the Republicans would have a point. That's not what a president should be doing. But that's not how he came. He used that prayer breakfast year after year to talk about his own faith journey, his own struggles. He's used it. He has come as a Christian.
Yeah. That's the point. I think that he is not a Muslim. He is a Christian. Bill Maher, him I don't like.
Well, but sometimes he makes a point.
Him I don't like. And I just
I even
like
agreed
him.
With Clarence Thomas today. I don't like him.
So you're disagreeing with Bill Maher, Rosemary, and you're agreeing
with Clarence
Thomas.
I know. What's happening to me?
Thomas.
Oh, no.
That means that in 24 hours, a clock that stopped will even be correct twice.
It's a safe bet, right? If we're going into a casino, it's a fairly safe bet that if the president comments on Christianity in any way, shape, or form, it is going to draw some sort of criticism from the religious right.
Certainly.
Yeah, I mean, and there's always going to be what Alan, I think you were referring to something that people call the big lie. You keep saying it over and over and over.
Right.
People start saying, well, maybe he is a Muslim.
He is, yeah.
Or maybe Obamacare is a blah, blah, blah.
Well, I would like to say, I don't think he's a Muslim, and I think his message was on point. I think that extremism is bad.
Let me just ask you one really important question.
Okay.
Where was the president of the United States born?
Exactly. I was just thinking about the same thing. These are the so-called birthers, and they say it again and again and again and again.
Yes.
One more piece of it.
By the way,
it's
Hawaii.
Part of the United States, yes.
Yes.
It's a little detached, but it is part.
It has been for decades.
Are we going to talk at all about the fact that Andrew Cuomo, when asked, embarrassing question, said he couldn't be responsible for Shelley Silver in the same way the president couldn't be responsible for Anthony Weiner, for being a friend of Anthony Weiner. That is
That's
so
funny.
Well, it's more than funny. It's also stupid. And
blaming me for Sheldon Silver is like blaming Obama for Anthony Weiner. So I don't get the connection.
Well, because Weiner was part of the federal government in the same way that the speaker is part of the state government.
Yes, but Andrew Cuomo, at every opportunity, shows his pal with a sombrero on, with him around the three sombreros, together.
That was a PowerPoint during his budget message.
Which he has done in every budget message. So there's why did he get rid of the Moreland Act Commission? Oh, I know why. Because he needed a budget passed by cooperating with Sheldon Silver, of of all things.
Yeah, this interaction really dumb. Between Bill Clinton and Anthony Weiner was virtually none. I mean, they because of Obama. Obama.
Right.
I mean, there was probably some more interaction between Bill Clinton.
Well, yeah, but why? And then, go ahead.
Know,
I'm sorry.
Just because I'm sorry, because they had a personal. But yes, Obama. He was one of hundreds of Congress members, and his personal actions had nothing. He had no interaction with Obama in that sense.
But why go after the president?
Well, I think Andrew was just in a bad spot at that moment, to tell you the truth. And somebody asked him an embarrassing question, and he thought he had a good answer, which is the way that people get themselves into trouble all the time. And he just did it. He just said it. It just turned out to be not good.
Mr. Cuomo cannot win with us. If he had said, I feel really bad for him. You know, he's done a great job. Mr. Silver is important, and I hate seeing this happen. I think he'll get free. Then we'd be here screaming that he was defending a person. He's distancing himself from a man who is
I think what Alan said, though, is absolutely true. It was just dumb.
I don't like to disagree with you, as you know, Rosemary.
I don't think it was dumb. I think it's kind of a clever little comparison.
Clever?
Yeah.
No, it would be a clever comparison if you said that, you know, it would be like blaming Mickey Mouse for what Donald Duck did or Daffy Duck. I mean, it's just like it doesn't make any sense.
Let the record show that Mike Spain, when Rosemary made that last comment, just made a really downward frown on his face.
Is that true? You frowned at me, Mike? I didn't notice that.
Roll back the videotape, ladies and gentlemen.
I have to agree, though, that we would be hard on him no matter what he did say.
Yeah,
it's very hard for me to get
distancing himself.
Wait a second.
Normal.
When he did the gay marriage thing, I was really delighted with what he did.
How about when he strengthened the gun laws? When he
turned down fracking. Yeah.
How about when he passed 4 budgets on time? He points all this out.
Well, he called me up when I wrote a wonderful column about how courageous he was when he did the gun law thing, and I got this call, and there he was, and he says, Alan, I see you wrote a good column about me. How come? I said, I just wanted to confuse you.
But the point here was that President Obama's relationship with a single congressman from Queens was very, very different than the governor of New York's contact and relationship with the Speaker of the State Assembly.
Both having offices in the same building, working as
two of the three
men in the room, right.
Yeah. Now you're just parsing a casual comment. Come on. You guys are tough.
I have nothing else.
I wouldn't, you know, it is the line in that article and that was published in the New Yorker that is making the papers. Mm-hmm. It's not just us parsing it, I would say.
Well,
I
don't know. So George Claxton says, the problem is one of religious extremism, not of any particular religion. While the Crusades were hundreds of years ago, slavery was not. The terrorism of the KKK and the Christian Citizens Brigades were not. Obama was right, and that was from George. Okay, and hey, panel, how about talking about all the snow? The city of Boston does not want people driving downtown in order to clean up the snow. So what do they do but shut down mass transit? And this is the city that wants the Olympics?
Well, the Olympics wouldn't be in the middle of February.
Or in the middle of the city, for that matter.
No, they're taking a lot of heat today for shutting down the MTA, aren't they?
A lot of heat.
Yeah. Charlie will never get off of it. So anyway, Andy says, did you get that? Charlie will never get off of it?
Yeah, try.
Nobody
we get
can.
It.
Okay. Andy said, while I understand why the press conference was dropped, the reason further illustrates the lack of multilingualism in this country. In Europe, I suspect the populace would be fairly conversant in both languages.
Excellent point, Andy. This is one of my missions. We have the worst language education in the world, bar none. We don't even start teaching our kids other languages until they're past the age where the brain absorbs them easily. It's nuts.
Yeah,
I agree with that entirely. But
in early America, we listened to opera, we listened to lectures, we listened to all sorts of the arts lectures that were done in other languages, and we've lost all that.
Yeah, yeah. Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Nein.
Ein bisschen.
I only know from what I heard on public radio.
No, I think it's one of the better things, one of the better on-the-fly decisions that we made. If we had longer to have set this thing up, but, you know, comes up at the last minute, and we say, okay, is the president and Merkel? Sure, we'll do it. And we did it. But you make a good point, Rosemary, that there is not a waiter in all of Europe who can't speak a good part of four languages.
Well, that's absolutely true. But, I mean, there's a difference between, I think that is a very good point, but I also do think there's a case to be made for, you know, what you broadcast to your audience and what you expect them to
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But.
Mm-hmm. And there's so, some people believe that everyone ought to learn our language. They ought to learn how to speak American like us.
Well, you know, I believe Angela can speak English, actually.
Well, and she did. That was what got us, too, because she started off in English. And we were like, oh, okay, this isn't going to be too bad. And
the Pope does that a lot. You know, he'll speak in his audience to all the different ethnic groups and demonstrate his bilingualism.
Absolutely. Mm. And we were saying in the newsroom yesterday, if the president came out, and so say the president went to Germany, and the president came out and spoke German. Wouldn't we have had a
one sentence that he practiced? Yeah.
Right. Wouldn't we have a fit?
It was wrong.
Right.
True.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll come back. And suddenly we're all agreeing. We obviously have to take a break and stop that. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. And Allardyce Glass and Mirror, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing sales, service, and installation of glass, shower enclosures, mirror, and screen products for the home. Allardyce.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable discussion for this Tuesday morning. And we're all in good spirits. Yep. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue. And we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have some mail to get to.
Not a lot, but Ricky says, I like Alan and Bill Maher.
Well, I like it doesn't have to be an either or.
I like Alan, but not so much Bill Maher.
How does he feel about Clarence Thomas?
And Penny, Rosemary's remarks. What was she drinking this morning? Does she know anything about how New York state government works and the necessity and the necessarily, so sorry, tight relationship between the governor and the assembly? And that's from Florence in West Shokan.
Hmm? My mother's coffee is the answer.
Yeah.
Not decaf, I suspect.
No.
Okay. And then Mark says, Rosemary is a terrific investigative reporter, but Rosemary, have you become so cynical that you've forgotten what it feels like to be in love? To ask people in Alabama to wait 4 months is like being told by your parents that you and the love of your life had to wait to be together? How sad.
Oh, no. I didn't say anything about waiting to be together, just waiting to get married.
You can be like little bunny rabbits, don't worry.
Be together as much as you want.
I don't want to get into this. It's too painful.
Good distinction, Rosemary. We have other letters.
We do? Oh, yes, we do. Okay, and we heard from Gary. Panel, I was driving with my girlfriend while listening to WMC, and we listened to Ms. Merkel speaking German for a good 5 minutes before I turned to her and said, I wish you would take a breath so the translator could speak. But on the other hand, the woman doing the signing for the deaf on the radio was great.
That's funny.
Tongue in cheek, says Gary.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you, Gary.
Everybody's in a good mood today.
Yeah,
Bonnie
kidding.
Says, dear folks, has it already been established that up is down and black is white? If, capital IF, uttered by Barack H. Obama since before he first ran for office, the Republican troll army would twist, quote, have a nice day into an attack on the American way. Okay. And then Gunnar says, I am an atheist, but Obama's refusal to refer to ISIS as Islamic extremism is political correctness at worst. Read the Quran. There isn't a modern extreme Islam. There is only Islam. All religions are fanatical. But in the 21st century, Islamic terrorism is the biggest religious threat to society. And that's from Gunnar.
Well, it isn't a religious threat. It's a military threat.
Well,
it's a terrorist attack.
You know,
that's
I don't
the
think
point, we'll, yeah. It is political correctness, but I don't know that it's at its worst. It's and kind of understandable.
And I don't agree with him that all religions are fanatical.
Wouldn't you think the risk, if he says, I mean, his fear is that the risk is that he will use a broad brush to paint all people of Islam, most of whom are peace-loving people in this world. And he's trying to avoid that and, you know, in the process.
Yes.
You know,
and we've just heard from the Rosemary fan club. keep up the fight, Rosemary. When they're hitting you hard, it usually means you're right.
Thank you.
Put that on a T-shirt. That's good. All right. All in
and
on
all
the letters? Okay.
Is there more?
No. I'm just saying I really like that
one.
Yeah,
well, of course you liked it.
No, not the Brady one, the one about signing for the deaf on the radio.
Oh, yeah, that was funny.
Did a good job.
Letter.
All
right.
But we'll hear from somebody about that.
Of course. All right. We have 9 minutes. There's a story that I feel we should talk about, and there's a story I want to talk about. So let's...
talk fast.
What about the one you want to talk about?
The measles parties.
Oh...
Really? Okay. So, according to several health sources and health officials in the state of California, they're warning patients not to hold measles parties that intentionally expose their children to measles and other childhood diseases. The California Department of Public Health, quote, strongly recommends against the intentional exposure of children to measles as it unnecessarily places the exposed children at potentially grave risk and could contribute to the further spread of the outbreak, the agency said in a statement today. Measles parties were popular in the 50s and 60s before the vaccine program was introduced for measles, mumps, and rubella. The practice of measles parties is now based on the belief that infected children will build up immunity to the virus because once someone has the measles, they cannot catch it again.
I have to check my cuckoo clock.
I asked my mother about this. Did she ever have it? Because she had a house full of kids, and you didn't have to. You had school.
Yeah, they call it school.
Right, they call it school.
And kids would miss 3 weeks of school if they came down with the measles. Some of them would have, heart problems, lung problems. Some of them would have brain swelling. I mean, these are have brain damage because of it.
If what we're saying here, though, if I'm reading this correctly, is that you are taking children who have not been vaccinated for measles and bringing them to an environment where they would have
intentionally
have measles.
And of course it was common. You wanted to do that because there was no
vaccine.
There was no way to avoid. So your thinking was get it now. The younger you are,
well,
the
like
more likely
pox.
You are.
Like, get over it.
Well, there are pox parties.
Yeah.
That's been written about a lot.
Sure.
And that's not recommended either, but it's far less threatening in
most
cases.
It's hard to think that people are doing that now when the real way to deal with measles is to get your kid a shot and they won't get it in the first place.
There was a Vox Pop yesterday on vaccinations. And,
how'd
my
that
God,
go?
It was really fascinating.
A lot of people called up.
Yeah, and there were, and on both sides.
Yeah.
On both sides.
On both sides.
You need to go listen.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
It's too bad because there is only one side.
Yeah, I mean, you had hundreds and hundreds of people a year dying of measles before the measles vaccine, but you had thousands, millions of people coming down with it, and that's a lot of suffering, a lot of missed school, a lot of pain, a lot of health risks, a lot of complications.
Here's the problem. There are those parents who believe what they believe, and there's really no stopping it. So that if you believe that your kid is going to, because you read something somewhere which has been disproven 10,000 times, that autism is caused by getting the shots. And you believe that. If you put the well-known thing on the arm, you know, the lie detector cuff on the arm, they're going to say, yes, of course it is, and you're going to get a straight line because they believe it. That's the problem.
And the problem besides that is that it affects our kids who don't believe that. Like, we don't believe that, and it's affecting our children because they aren't getting the shot.
Exactly right.
This is the nature of public health. There's a point where people's beliefs don't matter anymore. You need the shot. It has to be enforced.
Yeah.
And there are complications, you know, with the measles vaccinations. People have had reactions.
But with all vaccinations.
And all that stuff. Right. There's always a risk.
Yeah.
And some people are opting out because of that, perhaps, but in general, it puts everybody at risk when at least 97% of the population is not.
Should there be a law?
Not yet.
So should there be a law?
Well, you know,
Isn't there? I think there are in many states.
New York State requires you to have MMR to go to school.
To go to school.
Right.
Yeah, but if you don't do it and, you know, you're responsible for somebody else getting the measles, you know, I know Sam Waterston would have definitely tried them on Law & Order, trying to make a unique case.
As he should have.
I'd love to hear that summation.
As he should have. All right. And then the story we probably should talk about, and not as sexy, but...
this is the one you didn't want to talk about, but you thought we should talk about.
HSBC.
The bank fraud.
Investigative reporters.
Thanks. HSBC found itself under fire again Monday after news reports over the weekend provided more details about long-running accusations that its Swiss private banking arm helped clients hide billions of dollars in assets from international tax authorities before 2007. HSBC, a convenient, helpful bank.
Right.
Or, as Christine Lavin in her wonderful folk song once wrote, what could they have been thinking? I mean, what could they have been thinking?
Well, they were thinking what a lot of banks thought, you know, that you can protect your clients, make a lot of money, and put their money in Swiss bank accounts.
And you can't look down the road and see that this is going to come and bite you in the posterior?
Well, this came out because of a leak.
It was an employee that gave all the banking records.
There always is a leak. Eventually, there's going to be a leak. Somebody's going to tell on Shelley. Somebody's going to tell on this. That's why you don't do it. You do it, they're going to tell on you.
Well, some people have gotten away with some things because we don't know about it.
Are you sure?
Transparency is a good thing. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists wrote the story. And once again, it's journalists who are telling us what's going on, not our government, not our big businessmen. Bankers are not being punished, which is really bad, until the journalism came out. And now the bank's stock has fallen rather precipitously. Mm-hmm. And they have lost 70% of their client's stock in this bank account because of the illegal stuff they were doing.
Well, that's nice. But you always take so much credit for the journalists. But I've always thought good investigative reporting is somebody from the bank who may have been fired or had a bad problem coming up to a journalist and whispering something in their ear.
He didn't whisper it. He took all of the banking records, which you can go to jail for taking, and gave them not to journalists but to governments. He gave them to the French government.
You misunderstand me, I think.
Okay, sorry.
Unless you're doing it on purpose.
All right. We have less than a minute.
I do want lots of credit to go to journalists.
Not all investigative reporting is getting tips.
Well, no, but some of it is data crunching, good reporting. Yeah, okay. You guys are all the same all the time.
The whistleblower, however, deserves a lot of credit, Alan. I do agree with you on that. And in fact, he's the only one who's facing prosecution right now. No one from the bank. No one from the companies that I know of. I guess they've made some deals. They've made some deals, yeah, to pay back money. But he's facing actual jail time.
We are going to end it there. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, Rosemary, Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable. We'll continue after this.